but and it comes in a box like Baron Figs, but the box is a little beefier.
Hmm.
Kind of like unnecessarily beefy.
Unnecessarily beefy is cool. My band name.
It's my memoir title.
That's what I say now instead of dad bod.
I'm unnecessarily beefy.
Yeah.
Hello and welcome to episode 216 of the Erasable Podcast. Happy Equinox to everyone out there in podcast land. We haven't gotten to rap about Tools of the Trade in a few weeks, so tonight, join us for a slightly deep dive into what we've been up to and what we've been using. And at the end, we will talk about the next installment of the Erasable Book Club, which we haven't done in a while. Yay. So I'm really excited about that. And this was an excellent choice. So thank you to Andy. So we'll get to that in a little bit, though. But I got to thank my buddies and welcome them here. Andy, Johnny, it's good to hear your voices.
Hello. It's good to talk
Likewise.
To you. Yeah.
I'm hugging you both through the microphone.
Oh, Johnny, what did you put in the... What is this picture that you just put in the deck?
Oh, that's William Tecumseh Sherman.
What?
It's related to one of my Tools of the Trade.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I almost very confidently was like, Ulysses S. Grant, why is he there?
Just a rugged Civil War looking guy.
Yes.
Yeah. No, Grant like actually like tucked his shirt in and stuff. And shaved. And the looks of it, washed his hair.
Nerd.
President.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. So let's dive right into it. And let's start with Tools of the Trade. I feel like that's how we catch up anyways when we're just chatting with each other. So let's start with it. And Johnny, why don't you jump in, start us out, and tell us what you've been into.
Sure. I'm going to mix up the order of stuff that I actually consumed and start with The March, which is 2005 novel by E.L. Doctorow, who I've always been a big fan of, but for some reason I never knew this book came out. And I'm a big fan of the first half of Sherman's life. You know, the whole thing about killing all the buffalo later was not my favorite half of his life, but I don't know. There's something I like about him and Uncle Billy. So
I really hate those buffalo. They really had it coming.
Stupid. No,
he wanted to get rid of the natives, so he said, kill all the buffalo, they'll go away. And it worked. I mean, I guess you could have just killed all the natives, but it probably would have been a lot harder, because buffalo don't fight back. Not usually. But so, I don't know if you guys are Doctorow fans, but, you know, he always writes his novels, you know, in a historical period, often with real people, usually in New York, so this was different. But it has, like, maybe 15 or 20 different protagonists that it goes through, starting with after Atlanta, and then all the way up to the surrender of Joe Jackson. Oh my God, I can't remember. But yeah, it's like Sherman's in it. Sorry?
No, sorry. Never mind. That's a baseball reference. So those of you out there who got that one.
The three people who get that.
Enjoy that. Julius Joe Jackson could have been one of the greatest baseball players ever. Bet on himself with the Black Sox scandal. Was banned from Major League Baseball. Go on. You can keep talking.
But you know, there are a few generals that are characters or officers. Of course, Sherman plays in himself a little bit. There's a really good line where a freed slave was going north with a Union soldier, and she's like, is it any different up there? And he just looks at her and goes, no. And that was one of the last lines of the book. This was really good. I think it was a finalist for the Pulitzer, but it won Pen Faulkner, and it won the National Book Critics Award. So yeah, I'm embarrassed I didn't know about it. I got it as a gift. And on the other side of that, the other three books I read recently, The Library Thief, Fahrenheit 451, and The Bookbinder, or in England, The Bookbinder of Jericho, are all unconsciously related to libraries and books. But I don't have to tell anybody about Fahrenheit 451 or how I'm embarrassed that I never read it before. But did we talk about The Library Thief before? It's sort of a contemporary novel. But yeah, I don't know how you could talk about it without spoilers, so I just will say it. If you like books and if you like the power of libraries, you should read it.
If you like stealing libraries.
Yeah, that would...
Just to show you how.
You son of a gun, I'm in.
And most of the book, you're like, what? What do you mean library thief until the very end? But I haven't finished the bookbinder because now I started our other book. But the bookbinder was, it's by Pip Williams, who wrote The Dictionary of Lost Words. It was some sort of like famous with Reese Witherspoon pick. But I forgot about its existence and came across a video of Pip Williams binding her own book and was like, ooh. So.
Is the Library of Lost Words the one about, like, there's a group who is basically putting together the Oxford English Dictionary? Am I thinking of something else?
That's the history of everything, right? Or no. That's about that. That's nonfiction.
Yeah.
Though there's something along those lines in the bookbinder, but it's not, it's a supplement to the Oxford English Dictionary. No spoilers. But yeah, otherwise I just like watch way too much British TV. If you don't have BritBox, I don't know why not. You can't watch The Responder, which is Martin Freeman like dropping F-bombs, like eye drop stubble. It's like crazy.
What are you going to do when you run out of BritBox, Johnny?
You don't.
How close are you?
Infinite TV.
They only have three channels, so how many shows could be left for you to watch?
No, they are. It's owned by ITV and the BBC, and they keep taking their shows back from other streaming services when the contracts wear out. But then they have all these cool new shows, and you know, you're like, oh man, it sucks that that was a 6-episode season, but oh, this other show's out. And this is the time of year where a lot of the good stuff is coming out on PBS until, what, the new year, when All Creatures will be back. But Vandervalk, I'll finish the new season today, even though it's not out yet. But if you have, you know, your PBS passport, you get it the first night. But I don't know if you have you guys seen that show before?
What show?
It's called Vandervalk. It's about the eponymous detective, but it's set in Amsterdam, but it has an all British cast. But they film in Amsterdam, which is cool. But Darren De Silva, who I really like, has a big part in there. He's the medical examiner who drinks too much, has a lot of tattoos, and plays saxophone to dead people. It's like my kind of show. Yeah, I mean, I could go on and on about British shows, but I will not. And mostly I've been listening to stuff that'll start playing on Spotify when you're finished listening to what you're listening to. And Spotify identifies it as dark metal, but none of it's metal. It's, I don't know. It sounds like people who didn't grow up in the 80s making 80s inspired dark techno songs. But sometimes I'm covered in glue and I can't get up to change it. And yeah,
I mean, who hasn't been there?
Yeah, same.
Or you know, if you're like washing dishes and you're like, sometimes oh, that's covered sucks. In glue.
Yeah,
yeah.
Sometimes blood. You know, who knows?
Yeah. That was this morning. Yeah, I'm gonna stop.
What have you been writing with, Johnny?
I got a narwhal nautilus, and I don't know how to pronounce it. Celadonia green. It's one of those ebonites. It's very dark green, and I have a blood orange in it from diamine. Nice. But they hold so much damn ink that that's all I've been using lately. I should probably fill something else up. How about you, Mr. Andy?
Well, I had a couple long plane trips recently, and which I'll talk more about in Fresh Points. But I took that time to watch a couple full seasons of TV, which like in the old days, that would be like, oh, how can you have a plane trip that would you can watch a full season? But nowadays it's like 8 episodes, right? So on the way to Europe, I watched all of the latest Doctor Who season, which is very good. It is just really fun and just kind of like there was one episode that was very bad called Space Babies. And the rest of it was just was pretty good.
Band Space name Babies. Called it.
Yeah. Space Babies was not very good at all. Okay. It was kind of their just like very quirky kind of standalone episode. But yeah, it was really fun. Nakuti Gatwa, who is the new doctor, is so good and so energetic and yeah, just really, really enjoy his portrayal of the doctor. So I watched that on the way there, and then on the way back, I watched The Acolyte, which is the newest of the Star Wars seasons. I kind of haven't watched it as it aired just to have something for the plane. I don't know. I'm a way bigger Star Trek fan than I am Star Wars, but lately Star Wars TV shows have really been just like killing it. Like, you know, the Andor season one is some of the best television I think I've seen in a long time. Even like The Mandalorian's really good. Yeah, The Acolyte got a lot of criticism. Like, some of it was fairly poorly written. The pacing was a little weird. I thought it was good. I don't know. I like it when they go outside of like the regular old story, right? Like the whatever with Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker and stuff like that. So For the same reason I like Rogue One and Andor, I really like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't like it in the beginning. I thought like a lot of the acting was really bad. And the characters were like, why did you give that guy a personality and kill him right away? But by the end, and then the stranger came on, I was like, oh, this is cool. Season two of this is going to be awesome.
I did like how, I don't think this is a spoiler, that the stranger has a helmet and kind of like breathes funny. And they kind of explained a little bit about like why he, and maybe they didn't really talk about like Sith too much there, but it seems like maybe this is like a prototype Sith or something, why they're helmeted. And it's just to kind of keep the rest of the Jedi's out of their head. And then you just breathe funny because like it just all kind of reverberates around in your head. So that was kind of fun. Just like a proto Darth Vader.
Now I have to get back to it. I was like, when I first heard about it and I watched, I think the first episode or two, and was not like super turned off, but it was just kind of like, I'll get to it later. Just busy. Yeah. Like I'll watch something else. But the one thing with all my Star Wars nerd friends that I was always talking about was like, before all of these series started coming out, I was like, gosh, I just wish there was like a series that was about like the early days of the Jedi, like earlier days of the Jedi. And so when they announced this, I was like, oh, hell yeah. I'm like, this is gonna be great. And then it just didn't grab me. But now you guys did. That sounds, I want to see it. I know it's not going to be, returning for another season, right?
They canceled it just because of low ratings, I guess, and they kind of left the show on a little bit of a cliffhanger. Like, so it's interesting. Like another thing it does, which I feel like the Andor also did, was it just kind of like showed that it's not sort of like this black and white world of like, you know, Jedi's and Republic equal good and Empire equals bad. Like they kind of portrayed the Jedi's as like almost like these holier than thou kind of white knights, right? Like they're going around and said like, oh, actually, like they are kind of like very political and act like they're above it. And they also like are humans, for lack of a better term, and like cover up dumb stuff that's kind of imperialist. And I do appreciate, you know, adding a little bit more of that depth, because that's something I don't know if Star Wars had a whole lot of to begin with. Like it was very black and white. It was very just sort of like good guys and bad guys. You know, like an old Western, right? But
or like now.
Yeah.
Because yeah, political climate. But the lead learned English for that part. Because he really liked being Star Wars. Like, that sucks. And then, No more.
Yeah, he was great.
Maybe they could do a spinoff with The Stranger. I would, I'd watch that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be better. Maybe it's a blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
With apologies to the person who played the twins.
It's going to be like a Mandalorian... Boba Fett kind of situation where they just kind of pivot into another story for a minute. And like, maybe this time they'll stay there.
Watching that one episode, I'm like, wait, are we watching Boba Fett? Like, literally wasn't in this episode. I'm like, I really like the guy who plays Boba Fett. He's awesome. Things that come out of his mouth are hilarious.
Speaking of sequels and things like that, last night I went to go see the new Beetlejuice movie.
Ooh.
And that was really fun. It was really good. I think it's funny. I feel like, you know, Jenna Ortega is how old? She's a teenager and she's already been typecast. Like this character was, you know, not too far different from like Wednesday Addams. But Winona Ryder, you know, treat as always. Michael Keaton is in his 70s, but he's still doing a really good job. It was really fun. It was not as, I don't know, I remember the original Beetlejuice being scarier than maybe it was, but like the new movie wasn't at all that scary to me. I probably should have watched the first one before I went to see this one, but I liked that they had a lot, like they did a lot of practical effects, which is fun, which is good. So I enjoyed that.
I heard some interview, they did that on purpose, like where they like, everything was very like analog special effect kind of things. And there was like a very, of course, a very...
Some of it, I think,
reason for why they were doing that.
Yeah, I think Tim Burton is, you know, that's kind of his jam, and he just kind of gets whatever he wants because he's Tim Burton, which is great, like, as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, I did appreciate, like, the sandworms were just as kind of like cheesy and claymation-y as they were back in the original one. Yeah, that was fun.
They were funny. That would be a good tattoo.
Oh, like, just a Beetlejuice sandworm.
Yeah.
I also have been watching a lot of just randomly Antiques Roadshow and QI on YouTube. They have full episodes of like both the American and British Antiques Roadshow, and the algorithm has decided, well, because I keep watching, to show me them all. And then, do you guys ever watch QI?
I don't even know what that
is. I don't know what it is.
It's a British quiz show, and it used to be hosted by Stephen Fry. And he left to do other things because he was doing it for a long time. And now it's, her name is Sandy. I don't remember her last name, but I think that she was like one of the commentators on British Bake Off for a while. And it's basically there's four like comedians or actors or whatever. And it's allegedly a quiz show, but mostly it's just them being funny and like fooling around. Like it's fun. It's very British. So Johnny, you know, I don't know if you can watch quiz shows on BritBox.
I don't know.
I mean,
they have the weather and stuff.
Okay.
Weird.
Well, eventually you're going to run out of like fiction. So then you can start on quiz shows.
And once you finish the weather, you can move on.
Yes. All of the weather.
Quiz shows.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's depressing. I'm like, cold and rainy, bring it.
Yeah.
Just please.
I've been reading some books. I started reading the book club book, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. But I just finished. I bought a graphic novel called Calexit, the comic. It's basically about a completely fictional future where there is a fascist president who wants to deport all the immigrants, and California basically like breaks off from the union to like become a sanctuary state. And it kind of talks about like the warring factions within California and like, you know, the government sort of like going to war with California, like the federal government going to war with California. It's very grim, but it's a very good book. And completely unlikely. Would never happen.
Yeah, that would never happen. It might not happen in like a month.
Yeah. Finished on the plane this really good but weird book called Drunk on All Your Strange New Words, which is, I think I saw it at Powell's in Portland when I was there. And I just took a picture of it and like found it later. But it's about a science fiction-y near future where there's aliens, and the way that they kind of communicate with humanity is through special kind of psychic translators. And this is sort of about it's like a murder mystery that's kind of set in a world where that happens. So it's pretty good. And then do you guys ever read or know what the book, The Power Broker?
I've heard of it.
It's an old book written by Robert Caro about, it's a biography of Robert Moses, who was like that urban planner in who like planned Central Park and Golden Gate Park. And he was, arguably, this author argues, is like one of the most influential people of his time, which was, you know, the late 1800s, early 1900s. And he just sort of like maintained power and kept a low profile and just kind of like just lived in this little empire. And it's apparently a really, really, really good book, like a super good biography. And it came to Kindle for the first time. So I downloaded it. I think like 99% Invisible did like a huge multi-part series on it. So It's supposed to be pretty good. So I might, after we're done with our book club book, I might read that.
You know, it just became available finally, just now, on my Libby account.
Mm.
Was the nuclear war book that you had read?
Oh like yeah.
6 months ago.
Oh god.
That just reminded me of that when you were talking about it. I just got the audiobook. So I'm
hey, Tim, how's your anxiety levels, and do you want it to go up?
Haven't started it yet. But, you know, that's what I'll start listening to that after I drop the kids off at school. And then I'll be like, great. I'm going to go pick them up.
Then start working on your underground bunker and then abandon it because you realize it wouldn't save you.
I'll just hide under a desk like my kids are probably being told to do at school. So that was it. I had totally forgotten that I even asked for it, like as like a hold, and like 9 months later it shows up. I was like, oh damn it. I guess I'm doing this now.
Go on this journey. Well, good luck. So that's it for me. Tim, how about you, besides learning about nuclear apocalypse,
besides emotionally preparing for listening to that book? So I'm reading several things at once right now. I've been trying to just be really intentional about setting time aside during the day to read. I think I got into a habit of just only reading like at night. I think just with how my days go and just with being busy during the day and with kids, I was just like only reading like a few pages at night, which was fine. I enjoyed it, but trying to set aside some time during the day. And I just started the next entry in my rock and roll book club of one with myself. But I started reading a book called Sky Dog, which is a biography of Duane Allman from the Allman Brothers. And he was, I don't know how familiar or whatever you guys are with the Allman Brothers, but
I guess not very much.
Yeah. So they're kind of like a pioneer of like late 60s, early 70s, what's now called Southern Rock, but they apparently hated that name. Like, but they were, so it's a really incredible book. And Duane Allman was this guy who basically like started playing guitar at like 13, died at 25, but just totally changed everything. Especially with slide guitar. Like he plays electric slide guitar, like the blues, and is just incredible. And one of those people you listen to and you're like, how does anybody figure this out on their own before YouTube? Like, how does he get this good? But he also, like, before the, you know, aside from the Allman Brothers stuff, like as that was trying to take off, which he really didn't, he's one of those people in history, like artists who is known for things that became famous after he died, because he died in a motorcycle accident at 25. But he also was a session musician who played on like Aretha Franklin records and all these like amazing R&B and soul records. So the book is really, really good. So
I feel like the only like Allman Brothers songs I know is like Ramblin' Man and
Melissa, yeah, maybe, or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Black Hearted Woman is on there. Like, I'm just looking at the song list right now, and yeah, I haven't thought much about it.
The Live at Fillmore East album, when I was in high school, just kind of took over my brain, and it's still there. I still listen to it a lot. That album is probably the best live album I've ever listened to. So yeah, I was just looking for another guitar player biography, and that was one that had kind of been on my periphery that I was wanting to check out. So I'm reading that. I just got one in the mail today that I'm... It's going to sound really boring, but it's actually like, I think it's the most I've spent on a book in a while, which wasn't like a ton. It was like $50, but it was a used book on Thrift Books that I paid $50 for, but it's out of print, but it is universally like the top book in this world. But it's a book called Fender, The Sound Heard Round the World. And it's about Fender guitars. And it is like definitively like the Fender book. Everybody, you know, who I've talked to who's read it or have like read about it, everybody's just like, this book is just the best thing that's out there about Fender guitars and amps. And it, but it went out of print like a while ago, but I've been watching it on Thrift Books and ended up finding a copy for like $20 cheaper than it usually goes for. And it just came in today. So I'm going to start that soon. I'm super Fender's, excited about that.
Speaking of which, like just watching Antiques Roadshow, like people will bring in a Fender guitar and sometimes it's like, oh, well, this one is like, you know, has this chip here and this logo is one that they use for this. So like this one is only worth like $20. And then they have one that's like, oh, this one is like just a perfectly average one, except it's in this one light blue color, which is the same one that like John Lennon had. And so therefore this one is worth $40,000 or something. It's just people are so deep on Fenders.
It's wild. It's wild. Yeah. And they're extra wild than like other brands like Gibson and stuff, because they were basically made to be easy to fix. They were like the early 90s early 90s like Subaru of like guitars, where it's like everything's right there. You can fix it all yourself if you really want to. It's right there. So people swap out necks. You can like, because all the necks were bolt on, bolt off, whereas like Gibson's were glued into place. So it's like people swapped things. They changed out parts. They customized it. They did all these things. So like, yeah. So there are all the, there's this whole weird world where it's like, oh, this Telecaster is from 1956 and it's worth $4,000. This one's worth from 1955. But it has the right decal and they didn't change the tuners, so it's worth $70,000.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
nuts. Well, also, the Fenders are really, really durable. So, like, there are older ones around. One of my bandmates, when it's Les Paul, he's always like, man, if I drop this, I'm out a couple thousand bucks. I'm like, what? I'm like, you should see all the P bass spots where I've dropped it. I mean, I've never dropped a bass.
I'm sure you haven't. Yeah.
Just dropping the bass.
Drop. You slap at a bass. You do that all the time.
I dropped a 5-string once in the middle of folk group practice in high school. That made a really ungodly sound. In a chapel.
It's ungodly in a chapel? Man, you're going straight to hell.
No, man. It's probably sound like the devil. Yeah.
The friar laughed. I thought he was going to pee his pants.
So aside from that, I have been listening to a lot of Neil Young, which is never a bad thing. Yeah. I love me some Neil Young, but like he's one of those artists, not unlike the Grateful Dead, who I've talked about before, that like there's really no end point. Like you can just keep digging and digging and digging, because I've heard stories of him like showing up to recording sessions with his band, and he'd be like, I got these 8 new songs, and they'd spend all day and like the next day working on them. They'd take 2 days off and they'd come back. And he's like, all right, now I got these 10. They're like, what about the other 8? And he's like, we're going to move on to these 10. You know, so he just like writes so much music. And so anyways, really enjoying that. And I watched. So there's a song, The Birds Made Famous, My Back Pages, which is a Bob Dylan, like a very, very early Bob Dylan song. And they recorded it. The Birds recorded it, and it became like kind of a hit when they did it. And every time I put it on, you know, like Spotify or Amazon Music or whatever, it comes up as this version from the Bob Dylan 30th anniversary concert, which has like George Harrison and Neil Young and Bob Dylan and Roger McGuinn from the Birds and everyone, like everyone is on stage. They're all singing it together. And it's really good. But I was like, you know, I can't believe I've never watched, there has to be a DVD or like a recording or that I can stream. And I found it and oh boy, was it recorded in the 90s? It is fascinating. It wasn't great. Like there were parts of it that were really cool, but like it is the most 90s concert I've ever seen, which is just like bad, like fashion, the guitars they're playing, things. The people, like, usually, you know, whenever they do these like tribute shows, they always have like modern artists up against like the classics. And so it's like Neil Young and Stevie Wonder and, you know, all these, and then it's like, oh, John Mellencamp and Sinead O'Connor and, you know, which are, they're all like great artists that were performing, but the performances were so 90s, like so.
I thought you were gonna tell me like, and like Milli Vanilli came out or something.
No, it wasn't that bad. So it was really fascinating to like watch them kind of like navigate this whole thing, which I know, knowing like the band behind them, I'm like, oh gosh, well, that's Steve Cropper and, you know, Linkers playing drums and like all these like guys that I knew played with Bob Dylan. But the one thing, and like the sort of big moment that I didn't know happened to this concert. But you remember when, you know, the very famous, when Sinead O'Connor tore up the picture of the Pope?
Mm-hmm.
That was a week before this concert happened.
Oh.
And so she was asked
to play. It was on SNL, right?
On SNL, yeah. And she was asked to play at this concert. And I'd heard this story from, like, books that I'd read, but I didn't realize this is where it happened. So I got to see it. But Kris Kristofferson was another artist there. And so that's where it happened. Yeah. So Sinead O'Connor
comes out. He had to, like, encourage her to come out. And
they're... the fans are like booing her. Like they're just like audibly, like so loud booing her. And she like can't start the song. And then you see this big, you know, handsome man walk out and he like puts his arm around her and you can hear it from the microphone. That's like a few feet away. And he says, don't let the bastards get you down. I was like, oh, that's so cool. Yeah. And then she like sings like an acapella version of some song and then just walks off stage. Like doesn't do the other two she's supposed to do. It's like this really wild moment. Yeah. And you can kind of see the whole band and like everybody kind of processing it as the night goes on. They're like, well, that was pretty messed up.
Yeah.
Anyways, so I don't recommend watching the whole thing. I don't think it's like required watching or whatever, but you should watch that clip on YouTube because it's pretty fascinating to see that whole thing happen. And Kristofferson is just so amazing. So to see him come out and just be like, you know, you're fine. Like, don't listen to him. They don't know what they're talking about.
He wrote a song about Sinead O'Connor later, didn't he?
I think so. Yeah. I forget what it's called. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that guy. And then I think that's it. And then as far as writing with, I have been reading the book that we're going to talk about soon. I was in between Field Notes and it got me like jonesing for like kind of a Moleskine style notebook. So I ordered Paperage, which I talked about, or Paper Age, whatever we want to call it.
Mm.
They sell pocket hardbacks that are like pretty much identical to Moleskine. They're like $10 for two of them. Hardback. And so I got those. And yeah, it's identical and it's awesome. And so I've been carrying that around and loving it and writing mostly with my
gosh, now I'm forgetting what it's called. The Uniball, is it the one? Yeah, the Uniball 1.7 in black. Mm. The black barreled ones. That's the best pen in the world to me right now. I just use it all the time. And then in fountain pen land, I've been using this Mahjong. What's with the M5? What's that a knockoff of, Johnny? It's a...
Oh, the Pilot... Is it the retractable one?
No. It's a screw-on. It's kind of like a more, like... It's a piston filler screw-on, a little big. It's bigger. But anyways, I got lazy, and it had, like, a little bit of Pearl Noir left in it, and I didn't want to clean it out, but I wanted to use it right away. So I filled the rest of it up with the Diamine Aurora Borealis, which is like this sort of like blue green, and I love it. It's so good, and I'll never be able to recreate it again. So I'm just savoring it. It's this like the best dark green ever. It's like a dark green, but it still pops off the page. And so I've been using that a lot, and I really love it. So
I can't find the M5.
Is that me? I could have that name wrong. I'll look it up in a second, and then
is it clear?
No. No, it's black. Here, give me a second. But T5? Let's see. So this is the brand that, what they used to be called?
Moonman.
That's
but
right.
But then Kaweco Pen. Yeah, it's Moonman the T5. Europe, because they suck.
Right. It's the T5.
Oh, so that's pretty.
It's the black T5, which has been like a favorite pen for a while. I didn't swap the nib out or anything. I had a Goulet nib on it for a while, but I put this back on, luckily.
Why would you take a Goulet nib off this week?
It was before this week, believe it or not, but it would have been gone this week.
Where did anyways. You know that we didn't?
It was just a feeling. It was like, man, this thing's ugly. Get it out of here. Threw it across the room. Like, threw it into the garbage disposal. Beautiful. So that's that. Well, let's go to the next section. Let's get into Fresh Points. Let's talk about some more specifically stationary related stuff. Johnny, you want to start us out?
Sure. I really only have one update. We were talking about this before we recorded, but I don't know what the hell they call it anymore. It's like the social media group that is run by Bullet Journal, and it's membership based, so there are no ads, but there are like exclusive videos and roundtables and stuff. So they had one last week where they unveiled the new artist edition of the Bullet Journal 2.0 with the artist there. And I don't know like what we're supposed to do about it, because it's not like public yet, but we have them, or at least I am holding mine, so I don't know if we're supposed to put it on social media. But it's black, comes in a box, it has holographic ink on it, it's, you know, still a Leuchtturm book inside, but like it's the coolest looking bullet journal ever. So when it does come out on October 1st, like, go get one. It was expensive. I think it was like almost $40 without shipping, but they pay the artist, so that's good. I'm assuming that's why. I hope that's why. But yeah, you know, the newer ones have like really heavy paper, fewer pages, lots of bookmarks. And they have a booklet in the back that explains everything about bullet journaling. Like, you would have bought that book if you didn't already know that stuff. But it's a nice inclusion, and they always match. So, yeah. And like, the rest of my life is making books all day. So it's not that fun to like use them.
Not to be this guy.
I don't write enough. But I will say, if one of my co-hosts needed a pocket notebook that was not Moleskine, they should call me next time.
Okay. Sorry, Johnny.
No, I've had a lot of like...
This is the modern age. I was just like, two-day shipping. Yes.
I could get that out and like... Well, I could get it in the
mail. Yeah, Johnny, do you have two-day shipping? Can we get Johnny Prime?
My diary journal notebook, whatever you want to call it, that I'm still absolutely in love with is the one that you gave me in Baltimore. The one that has the marbled cover. Like, oh, cool. I am absolutely going to get another one in that exact same like format, because I love that thing. I've got like a quarter of it left. What were the dimensions on that? It was like...
It was like 4 and change by 7, but
it's like I got a little taller. Yeah.
Now I'm doing 7 by like 5.5, which is like really a nice hand feel.
Oh,
well, does it feel narrow?
Try that next. Good. Yeah. But I was just saying, I don't want to be that guy. But with the whole, like, with the bullet journal thing and, like, the price of the notebook and all that, I'm like, it's great that he's paying the artist, but he's gone on a very simple idea. Like,
yeah.
He's not exactly reinventing, like, anything, like, as this is going on. So, I don't know. He still has to pay his bills, and I appreciate it. But it's also, like, come on.
I assume Ryder Carroll has, like, a huge Coke habit, and he's just trying to, like,
yeah.
I don't know. He's really calm. He's like so mellow on these videos. Like, he clearly does not like being in front of a camera, but he does a really good job. Or I mean, maybe I'm wrong and I'm picking it up wrong, but he seems completely comfortable with it.
And I appreciate it all. And I haven't gotten that vibe from him, but I'm just like,
yeah,
these things, they start getting expensive.
He's really cool to hang out with.
I'm sure he is. Yeah.
But he keeps adding stuff and changing stuff in the way he does bullet journaling. So I wonder if, you know, a revision of that book will be out one day. Because the book was really good, but, you know, he's very serious. He always, you know, writes in black, dresses in black, like he doesn't draw in there. Oh, if I can have one more thing, I discovered Tim and I have like waxed about black inks before, and Pearl Noir was always one of my favorites from Girabon, but Diamine's Onyx is like ridiculously black. And unlike Lavender, black will perform on crappy paper.
When are we going to see like a Vanta black ink?
I don't know. That would be cool.
Like something that just like eats like 99.9% of the light.
This one's cool. Pretty close. This is like 92.
It's pretty close. Yeah.
Wow.
They'll write them the way they write paper. Like, this is 94 white. Like, this is 94 black. like this stuff will cure a headache. It's so dark.
Pour it in your eyes. It's fine.
Yeah, and it's diamine, so a big bottle of it's like $15.
Yeah.
If you're feeling overstimulated, just get like a jeweler's eye thing and look into like a circle you made of Pearl Noir. And it will just suck all the overstimulation out of you. Okay. It's like a
sensory deprivation chamber.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, like sensory deprivation tanks. It's like everything's gone.
I'm gonna do it tomorrow. I hate Tuesdays.
They say it will drive you mad after 20 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. So how about your adventure?
Yeah. Was that a prompt, Johnny?
Yeah.
Okay.
Since you got back, I didn't want to text you. It would be like, Andy, tell me all about your trip over text.
Yeah. It's like holding back from just being like,
yeah.
Play by play.
Well, let's see. Minute one, drove to the airport. And no, it was good. It was a lot. It was just like, I walked probably, like 8 miles a day. It was a lot. We went to Sweden first. And Sweden, it's a really, like, Stockholm is a, I mean, I went during the summer, like when it is like pretty warm. Like, I can't imagine like just how brutal the winters could be, but like it is during the summer, at least it's just a really, really nice place where I really feel like I could see myself living in a place like that. Right. Like, they had really good public transit. We decided to take like the train from the airport into the city center, which is like 30 miles away, instead of a taxi. And I was like, oh, I hope we can get a train. But like, the trains go every 10 minutes. Right. And it takes like 15 minutes to get to cross that distance. And it costs like $12. And just, it's really easy to get around, and it's really clean. And everybody speaks English, which is really useful.
Did you feel like you were in the future? Like,
it seems like it would be in the future, except that you walk past a building and it was like built in like the 1600s, right? Like,
right.
It was just like an extremely just like functional place. And like, San Francisco, pretty good public transit for like US standards, right? Like, it's no New York, but like it's pretty good, but just nothing compared to like how kind of fully built out like the underground rail was. And yeah, it was really cool. What did we do? We ate a lot. I drank a lot of beer, fancy beers, and coffee. Could find coffee everywhere. I feel like my only like reference for Swedish, like the language, was IKEA. And
can you please point me to the pencil cups?
Yes. And it was like, I kept seeing the word Malm everywhere, and I was like, Malm, you know, like the desks. And Malm means like island, right? So you see like Södermalm, and that means south of the island. And so it's like, oh, hey, like that is something beyond a piece of furniture, huh? But really, really good museums in Stockholm. There was, there's this museum called the Vasa, which is so apparently in the 1600s, the Swedish were like a naval power, and they would build these like really amazing wooden warships, and they would like launch them. And they spent all this time on this like really big, elaborate warship. And it had like all this like
statuary on it and all these like gun cannons, and they like got to the middle of the like harbor and it sank just immediately. Oh. And they knew about this like warship and for like hundreds of years afterwards, right? Like 300 years afterwards, they just didn't have the means to get to it.
Mm-hmm.
And finally in the 1950s, they had like good sonar and they could like resurrect the ship. And so they lifted this ship up and they brought it back to the harbor and they built a museum around it.
That's so cool.
And it's just this like amazing, and they like have all these preservation techniques. And so there's this giant ship just in the middle of this building you walk in, and you can't really go onto the boat itself, but they do a really, really good job of like, you know, it's a relatively simple, straightforward thing. It's like this old warship that they are restoring, but they have so much like content and so much stuff kind of like around it. That's like, here are some skeletons we found, and here is what that person might have looked like, and this is what that person probably did, and this is the kind of thing they ate. And yeah, it was just really fascinating. I think that was my favorite museum.
Two things come to mind. First one, I'm not going to talk about because it's in the book, and I want to wait until we talk about the book. But like you mentioned the shipwreck, and a couple days ago, so I found out that, I don't know if you saw this over the summer, but they found Shackleton's ship that he died on. Did you see this in the news?
I
totally missed this. They found it had sank off the coast of Canada. My dad was like obsessed with Shackleton growing up. Like I have all the books from my garage, on my bookshelf in my garage. Like I have all the books that he read. He gave them to me, and I was like, and I'm still planning to get to him. But I was so excited when I found that out. I was like texting it to Jane. She's like, easy, buddy. Like, don't care that much. I know you're excited. And I was like, no, but they found it. It's like the one. It's the one where he was, it all ended and they didn't know where he was. It's like, they found it. Should
we do a spinoff podcast where we just talk about like Shackleton ship?
Yeah, man. Let's do it. Yeah. Henry's reading Who Was Ernest Shackleton right now, the Who Was series of books. Oh. I got it for him like a long time ago. And then I got this news and I was like, oh, Henry, they found it. Didn't you read that book? Did you finish it? And he's like, no. And he like went and grabbed it and started reading. I was like, oh,
nerds.
Love you. Nerds. I've got, when you finish that, we'll read the 1,000-page version from Grandpa in the garage.
Starter Shackleton.
Yeah. Sorry. But that sounds super cool. And I've been, I forget where I was, but I went to Europe and I was in a similar museum somewhere that was like all based around like a sunken ship that had been pulled up. And it was like one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
Nope. Were you in Stockholm? Awesome.
No.
Okay.
It was somewhere else. It was, and it was a small ship. It was like it was maybe like 30 feet long.
Yeah.
It was like smaller thing, but it was a really cool experience.
So yeah, it was really fun. We got some tattoos as like a little souvenir. That was fun.
Wait, what?
Oh, didn't I send this to you?
No.
A picture. apparently I didn't. So I like to drink coffee and Erica likes to drink tea. And so we decided she got a tattoo of a coffee plant and I got a tattoo of a tea plant.
That's just cool.
A nice little, I'll send you all a picture of this. Yeah. She has a few tattoos that she got just as a souvenir on vacation. I was like, that's a really fun thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, it's like the ultimate passport.
Yeah, exactly. So that was Stockholm. And then after that, we went to Barcelona. And Barcelona was way more chaotic and just like so busy, just like so full of tourists. But also just like also charming. And just the architecture is incredible. Like who was talking about that Ta-Nehisi Coates book, the Between the World and Me, where he went to like, to Europe for the first time and he's talking about the door. Do you guys read this book?
Mm-mm.
Like he saw just a random door in like, I don't remember where he was, like Spain or France or something. And he was like, this door is just like incredibly ornate and has so much history. And this door is older than my country. And he was like, and that's just the door. Like I felt like that about just walking around Barcelona. Like there was just in the middle of like the Gothic Quarter, which is the sort of like narrow streets and like alleyways. There's just a cathedral from the 1300s. And that's still standing, and you can go around the back of it, just see sort of like this brick that's been overlaid with other brick and like just been kind of rebuilt and knocked down. And yeah, just amazing architecture, just really intense statues. And of course, like the Sagrada Familia, which is like kind of the big famous church there. That's not that old comparatively, like it was built, it was started in like the 1800s, but just also just an insane looking building. Like, so cool. So cool, but pretty insane. I did find, I feel like this is a crowning achievement. I found a press penny machine around there. They don't have pennies. It was actually a 5 euros or 5 cents euro. Like, you know, like
you're there for like 20 minutes trying to shove a penny into it. You're like, God, I want to
take my money. So, like, I want to. So you put in a euro coin and then like a euro nickel. So like a 5 cent piece, which is made of copper, and you can press that out. So I was like, yes,
like it's not going to fit in my penny book.
Yeah. It is like a little bit different of a size. So I'm going to have to figure out what to do about that. So yeah. So yeah, that was really cool. We had just amazing like paella, and yeah, it was really neat. We were there over sort of like the Catalonia national holiday, which I don't know if you're familiar with Spain or not, but like, so the state of Catalonia is sort of like has a completely separate national identity from Spain. Like they speak Catalan. They don't, I mean, they're Spanish all around, but like everything is also in Catalan, which is sort of Portuguese-y, sort of Spanish-y, sort of Frenchy. And went to a museum just about the history of Catalan. And it's like this autonomous region. And there's protests and there's like political prisoners. And it's, apparently there's been a little bit of unrest, but there's always like just a very distinct kind of national identity. So it was like Spain, but also it wasn't Spain. So that was kind of an interesting thing that I never really thought much about. So didn't like have any really amazing stationary experiences. I guess the biggest one was I was at like the hotel in Barcelona was just right across the street from this like 4-story stationery shop. It's apparently one of the biggest in Europe, and it's really cool. It wasn't anything that was like super different that I haven't seen. Although I did pick up some really interesting Uniball pens. I have never heard of, maybe you guys have. Have you ever heard of Uniball EYE?
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
They're the vision pens, aren't they?
Yeah, they're slightly different takes on the vision pens. So I did find one that looks like the Vision Pro Elite ones. It looks just like that, except they have my green. They have the old green that I love. Yeah. The evergreen. That's so awesome. I did find a, next time I go, I'm going to, or find, know anybody who's going and be like, I need you to buy like 10 more of these. But, yeah. So I didn't do a whole lot of stationery shopping, but I did do something I think I talked about wanting to do here before, which was just like do a little bit of travel journaling. So I bought that HP Sprocket, and it's also really good, by the way, for printing out like on the go, like little selfies with groups of friends. Like in both Stockholm and Barcelona, I hung out with some friends who live there now. And we would take like a selfie at dinner, and then I would just like print out like little copies just to hand to everybody, which was kind of fun.
That idea since you talked about it has been festering. Like I've been thinking about it, because that sounds really nice to go through all the steps. No, just like to take a picture, and like that's one of the, you know, things about like the digital age is like, if I take a picture of my kids, it's like, oh, I have to go on Shutterfly, or I need to like, get to this place, or I need to do all this stupid shit. It's like, I just want to have it. It doesn't have to be perfect. Like, I just want like a little picture of it, but I also don't want to buy this hipster thing. It's going to cost like $20 for 11 pictures or whatever. Like,
The Instax. Well, this is kind of best of both, right? Like, I have one too. This is kind of best of both, because you have both a digital copy and this physical copy. So, So yeah, it's really nice. I used it a lot for that travel journaling. I would take pictures, because you can make little collages. So sometimes I would put like 2 pictures on one and then like cut them apart and stick them in different places in the notebook and kind of write around them like on a page. It's kind of fun. So yeah, highly recommend that. Yeah, just had a really good time in Europe. I'd love to go back. I only went to 2 places in this just like incredibly, so it's like rich, dense place, but yeah, the density was also really amazing. Just like houses just right next to each other, and buildings that like they like go up more than just, you know, a few floors, right? Like just so many people packed in one spot, which actually kind of like for infrastructure reasons, right? Like, public transit was so good.
Did you bump into any of those like spots where it was like, these places are 3 inches apart, that one and that one were built 500 years apart?
Yeah, right.
Like, how did you see any of that? Yeah, like,
yeah, Yeah, there was some of that, like both Old Town Gamlestan, which is the Old Town area of Stockholm, and also just the Gothic Quarter in Barcelona had a lot of that. Like this building was built, and it just clearly in like the 1600s, 1700s, and then, you know, this is like a fairly new-ish looking apartment building right next to it, and just wonder how they made that work. It's also really funny, like Barcelona is so touristy. And they had just ridiculous, like, you know, when you go to like a place like Times Square in New York or like the Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco, and they have just like shops that sell just like really dumb t-shirts. Mm-hmm. Like Barcelona had this just like times 10. Like there was this one store that sold I Heart shirts, like I Heart something or other. And there was like I Heart Barcelona and things. But there was one that just said I Heart Sluts. There's one that was like I Heart Big Boobs. And just like, who goes on vacation and just like buys an I Heart
Sluts? That's the one. Yeah. I want it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I think I'll take this one. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think the world knows how much I
don't know if I want this one or this one. No.
Yeah.
That one. Okay. Let's just pick one. I'm happy with it. Yeah.
It's so weird.
And just on the airplane.
Yeah, exactly. It's just all over the place. And yeah, it was so weird.
That reminds me, I went to we took our kids to it's like water park. It's like the Dolly Parton water park called Splash Country in Dollywood. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was this guy there who just walked in, which of course I notice it like times 10 being a former teacher now, but like it just said his teacher was wearing a teacher that just says pay teachers less. Which I was like that it was so simple. There was nothing else on it. I was just like, part of me was like, okay, man, like, respect.
I don't know whether to punch you or shake your hand.
Yeah. I would wonder if it was some sort of really high irony that I just didn't get.
Yeah.
That's why I spent the next 45 minutes in my brain. I was just like, okay, so maybe it was like, you know, he really liked teachers and he went to teacher school and they sold this shirt for fun at their school. It was like, you know, of course I was trying to figure it out, but no, but the look on his face, I think it was real. I think he meant it. That was just like, he looks like the kind of kid who was not in school. Anyways, I was just like, fascinated.
They're just trying to turn our kids woke.
Yeah.
Teacher's less. Yeah. Just stuff like that. It was amazing.
No, it said cut teacher salaries. Yeah. That's what it was.
Okay.
Which kind of changes it. That's what it was. So it's like, that's even more aggressive. That's like, oh, well, geez, you know, not like just pay teachers. No, cut teacher salaries. It's like,
yeah.
Wow. So I wonder if they sold that at that shop in Barcelona.
Hopefully. Yeah, so many. There's, yeah. So did eat a lot of really good, you know, cured hams and olives. And yeah, it was delicious. So highly recommend.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I'm really hungry. It's like almost 10 o'clock.
Got to wrap this up. So, yeah, well, I mean, that was it for me. So, yeah, Tim, how about your fresh points?
Yeah, I've only got two, but the one, and I've got some props here. Listen, you hear that? These are two things. So, I have been spending some time, as we've talked about before, and Ajay's done this, but like learning more about ADHD, and just kind of diving in, trying to learn like what it means because it's different for every single person. And I was diagnosed and kind of like been learning about it for the last like 3 or 4 years a lot, and it's been super helpful.
Let me ask you, Tim, did Ernest Shackleton have ADHD?
Probably.
Okay.
No, I'm just guessing that.
I don't know. Sorry.
All my heroes have ADHD. That's the t-shirt I'm going to make. All my heroes had ADHD. Actually, would be a great shirt.
That would be a really good shirt. Yeah.
Yeah. So I heard this. It was a stationary related metaphor for ADHD, and one that is connected to something we've talked about before. But the guy was explaining ADHD and like ADHD versus a neurotypical brain. He said, this is a neurotypical brain. And he picked up a Parker jotter and he held it in front of the screen. And he said, this is a neurotypical brain. You have a decision in front of you. The decision is symbolized by clicking the pen and it comes out. And that's the thing that you do. You're like, this is the thing that I know I need to do. And he clicks it. He says, and you take care of the task that needs to be done. You're done, right? And then he said, for the ADHD brain, it's more like this. And he held up, and I'm holding a, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 color multi pen. He said, the ADHD brand is more like this. And he said, this color is, I have something I need to return to the store. This one is, I need to take the trash out. This one is, I still haven't mowed the grass. This one is, my boss needed me to email him about this or whatever. And goes through and he does, his has like six or whatever. He's like, the concept was basically like, there are all these different colors and you can't like figure out which one it is that you're supposed to click. You can't figure out which one it is that you're supposed to click, or you can't, it's not easy, or not that you can't figure it out. Like you're literally unable, but just like the challenge is that you have to very consciously think about like, I'm not thinking about one thing at a time. I'm thinking about 10 things at a time. Yeah. Right. And so like, and it was like a life-changing moment where like when he like described it that way, I was like, because I'm not the typical kind of hyper, you know, like where people, the stereotypical, you know, how it's talked about is like, oh, well, you're full of energy and all this. Like, no, it's not really me.
I'm very tired.
Yeah. I just exhaust myself because I'm always trying to push 10 thoughts out at once, you know, like all the time. And I guess it's just because he was using stationery to make the point. It hit home, and I thought that was helpful, and I wanted to share it because I thought it was interesting, it was stationary related, but also hopefully it helps somebody, because it's like, I think for me, like having some of those kind of like models to think about it, because one of the biggest problems I have is like talking to other people and like explaining what it's like. I mean, like talking to my mom, right? Being like, she's like, oh, you don't have that. Like, you don't have to deal with that. I'm like, no, I do. Here's what it's like. And it's hard to explain it, but things like that help me, you know, just kind of make sense of it. Like, this is why I can hyper-focus on one thing for a while when I'm not distracted by other things. But if I have to make a decision, it's hard. It can be hard for me to figure out like, this is the direction I need to go, or like feel that kind of like.
And as you're describing that, I'm just thinking like, well, isn't that the way it works for everybody? Cause
Andy, we should talk later.
I feel like I want to add that the 10 color pen has like three colors that don't work and you don't know which three color.
One of them is a pencil.
Three colors where you're like, I don't even know what those colors are.
Yeah. One is a pin and just put the hole in your paper and you're like, what the hell?
One of them you push
a piece of cheese.
Like,
I don't know.
Yeah, I was gonna say like a hot dog comes out when you push that one.
No, the desire for a hot dog.
Yeah, just
like I'm balancing my budget. Oh shit, I'm hungry. A hot dog. Yeah. Like right now I need a hot dog. Yeah. And I'm a vegetarian though.
Oh my gosh. But it was super like helpful. And like 2 hours before, I had been reminded of that amazing scene from Malcolm in the Middle where Bryan Cranston, it's like people talk about it as being like the best depiction of ADHD ever in television, and where like, he like comes into the house and he checks, like he tries to turn on a light and the light bulb's out. And by the end of it, he's like outside in his underwear changing the oil, like, but he hasn't changed the light bulb. Like, oh my gosh.
That's my life a lot of days.
Because it's just like a series of like, oh, wait, hang on. Oh, I gotta do that. Yeah. Anyways. So yes, that was
who knew that the dad from Malcolm in the Middle would turn out to be like one of the most like celebrated intense actors out there.
Right? Absolutely. Like, I love it. It makes me so happy.
Definitely not Malcolm.
Yeah.
But Jane Kasmirik had a moment.
Yeah. She's great.
So that's that. Mm-hmm. Other thing. Oh, yeah. Blackwing. There's a new Blackwing out.
Wait, you're going to talk about pencils now? On this show?
Have you guys heard about pencils? There's all kinds out there.
Isn't this volume 25, the gift wrap edition?
This is the Oops, I Made a Blackwing edition. So Blackwing 71 tribute to Frank Lloyd Wright came out recently, which is a cool topic. So architect, very famous. The houses that he made, buildings that he made are still
kind of
famous.
Kind of a shitty guy.
Yeah, as a lot of people were back then. Yeah, but he was definitely,
Did he have ADHD? Modern standards,
probably. So there's the other T-shirt. all of my antagonists had ADHD.
All the shitty guys from the olden days had ADHD.
Yeah. Yes. So I don't have these in hand, but just to like introduce them, so he like it's extra firm graphite, which is cool. The copper colored ferrule, which is a cool thing. The pencils, though, came in four different versions, right? So it's like a natural finish, and it's done with a, correct me, Andy, roll-on? Is that what they're calling it?
It's not a natural finish. Roll-on. In transparent finish.
Transparent roll-on wrap finish.
They roll the wrap
around roll-on. They roll on the wrap-on.
Roll on
Everybody
the
used to paint them.
Yeah.
So
I miss paint. Remember paint?
I mean, they do
YouTube
paint
the guitar player ones. Who says, like, remember when they used to have chords in songs? Like, he always talks about that. I was like, remember when they used to have paint on pencils? So, yeah, curious. So, Johnny, I'm assuming you have these in hand. Andy, do you have these?
I do.
Okay. So, what are they like in person?
I will say, I really like the thing that, you know, it's kind of overlooked. It has a nice orange stripe on the ferrule, kind of a la Golden Bear. So I do really like it when somebody goes to like a little extra and puts like a little painted stripe on the ferrule. So that's cool.
Yeah, that is a good point. I mean, that does look good. And I am definitely hyper fixating in on one of the erasers is kind of like a dark copper colored eraser.
Yeah.
Which like that makes me happy. And I wish I could buy like a whole pack of those because I like that.
I don't know if there's like any other things like the copper ferrule is like, it's funny. I didn't even know it was copper until I had it sitting next to a black wing, a different black wing with a regular gold ferrule. Cause it's not super coppery. Okay. And like, I don't know. There's some concepts that are really hard, especially when you're talking about like artists or designers or something like that to like translate that to pencil, like that Basquiat Blackwing and that Woody Guthrie Blackwing, like they didn't look that good because they were trying to like translate this thing, this visual thing to like a little round barrel.
Very small. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I think that's the case here. Like, I don't really know what the design is that they're wrapping around these pencils, right? Like, rolling on the pencils.
Yeah.
And it's definitely cut off because like, it's hard to do, right? Like you can see the seam. So I would guess if I were to unwind this and roll it out, like there would be a pattern that would be relevant to like arts and crafts movement or something from a Frank Lloyd Wright house, but I just don't see it. Like the colors. Yeah. The colors are nice, but the fact that it's kind of much like the Basquiat pencil where there's like these designs that are kind of overlaid on the wood, it just looks kind of weird. And that's the case here.
Yeah, like when Fieldhouse first started doing those, what they used to call them, the seasonal editions, they just played with color, which I appreciate it. Like, I thought that was cool. And then Blackwing sort of did that for a while. But, like, I don't know what the hell the shapes are supposed to be, but I really like the colors. If they had done, like, you know, wash stain in those colors and just made the whole pencil that color, those would have been, like, absolutely gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
Probably cheaper.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I have no idea. That cannot be true.
Here's a question. How hard is it to remove a roll-on wrap-on?
Oh.
I assume there's heat involved to get it to stick to the wood.
Yeah, they're not like the old foil-wrapped ones where it's just a piece of plastic that you can like pick apart and roll off. But it's...
Part two, I'm basically figuring out how I can buy 10 dozen of these, take that off and press on Blackwing 211 and sell them on eBay. Could I do is there a way to do that? No, I'm just kidding.
You could just get some of the natural ones and sand them.
Yeah. You son of a bitch, I'm in.
We'll take all of your 71s.
We're gonna start our
turn the 7 into a 2 and then add another one onto the end. It's gonna be like a It'll look like a kid who is trying to like change their, you know, C minus into an A plus or something. Like it's going to say 211 and then we'll put them on eBay. Sell them for $400 a dozen.
Just a massive Blackwing counterfeit ring.
I hope this isn't a spoiler. The subscriber extra was a cutout sticker of that famous, I guess it's a print that has all of his pencils on it.
I always thought it was a puzzle, but yeah, I think it's a print. You're right.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
That would actually like make a cool tattoo, but probably somebody would hate you for asking for it.
It's really
oh my god.
Yeah, I think you're right. There were so many good like Frank Lloyd Wright colors, right? Like kind of that deep orange and some like grays and like dark woods. And if they could have just like maybe they could have stained the wood, right? Like a kind of deeper cherry wood, like that American cherry or oak that he uses.
Even like a color wash like IKEA sells.
Yeah, like that.
The way that just pick the colors they did, because the colors I thought were pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I really like those blues.
That was I like the blue. Like, actually, like, yeah, I like all the colors. Like, part of me was wondering if they had done this and just picked two of them, one or two of them, and just done them all the same, I mean, maybe that makes it harder because they have to match more, and we'd be bitching about that. Or sorry, we'd be complaining about that if that's what happened. But like, just almost like a pick a lane kind of thing. It's like if they were all, for me, if they were all that like orangey color and that kind of like minty, like dark mint green color, the darker green. If they were all that, those two colors, I'd be like, oh, these are kind of cool. But something about seeing all four of those together was just kind of like,
And I do like, you know, it's extra from graphite, which I appreciate. So yeah, it's a good, it was a, the design, the theme didn't seem super cohesive, right? Like the, well, sorry, the design, the execution on the theme didn't seem super cohesive, but yeah, it was, it's okay. It's a, it'll be a, you know, a pencil. I'll probably, you know, use one down and then stick it in the archive.
Yeah. They super reminded me of the Basquiat ones because of the wood showing through the, the wrap. But I remember the wraps used to have a white primer underneath. So I wonder if this is a different process.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they only had a couple, or at least the, if not, their white primer was like really, really thin. And so you couldn't really see it when you would sharpen it down very
well. Yeah, I mean, people have really perfected. Yeah. I can't imagine these wraps are cheaper, or at least not that much cheaper.
Yeah.
Which, again, I could have no idea what I'm talking about. Maybe they're, like, super cheap.
Yeah.
But they did some legal pads, too, that I didn't get had some interesting grids. And at the top, they were red, which I thought was actually pretty sharp. I don't know how like red ties in.
They have, like, an isometric grid on here. That's cool.
Yeah, that was pretty neat. Usually they do another version of the hardcover book.
Yeah, that was cool. And those do look good.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been really cool if they came out with like an extra, extra firm core just for this one.
Just like a fork. Oh, yeah, because of an architect, right?
Yeah, they were just like called the needle grade.
Yeah.
That would be cool. I would, that would definitely have been a perk, just something different. Yeah. But
yeah. It's so expensive.
Cool.
But I did notice, like, I feel like this bear is remarking that these things have gone up to like, what, like $30 a dozen now? They started at 15, but
32.
A subscription is still $99 a year. So like, I actually didn't know that. I thought it went up because mine just auto renews, but that's pretty cool. I dig that.
Yeah. Like, if I was just buying this on the website, it'd be $32 for a dozen.
Dang. That's an even better deal.
The thing that I don't quite understand, I'm just going to be like Andy Rooney complaining about everything now, but like, the dollar add-on for like shipping protection.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen that from any other website.
Bullet Journal used to do something like that, if I'm right, but now instead they donate it and they let you pick where it goes.
Okay.
So like, there's an alternative. Like,
why don't you protect my shipping without me paying an extra dollar?
Yeah, like, it's already protected, bro. It's called, if I don't get it, you send me another one.
Yeah. What's the deal with shipping protection? No.
Well, there's that.
All right. Should we talk about the book card?
Yes.
All right. Oh, my gosh. Tim just sent a picture of Asha. Oh, what a sweet face.
That is the face when I'm working in my office when she's just like, stop ignoring me. And she jumps up with her paws on the arm of my chair and just pats me on the arm until I start petting her. And I start scratching her and her eyes just roll back in her head. And then she just stares at me. So I just thought I'd share that with you. That's right now. She's just like, this is really late for work, but okay, fine. Let's start petting me. Like,
I'm not a cat person, but that is a cute cat.
She's really sweet. She's great. Yeah.
All right. So we are going to do another book club and we're going to start the next time we record. So you should go and get your copy either from the library or from your local bookstore, or if you have to, Amazon. That's what I did just because it was the easiest and I wasn't really near a bookstore. But we're going to be talking about a book called The Notebook, A History of Thinking on Paper by Roland Allen. Different The Notebook. So it's a little bit about like the history of The Notebook. He talks about like Leonardo da Vinci and Frida Kahlo and Isaac Newton and Marie Curie, and talks a little bit about like the, you know, the benefits of that over, you know, digital note taking or not taking notes, like letting AI take notes. So it seems like it's a little bit of a combination of like the science and the history of notebooks. And
didn't find out until one of you guys sent me the link that he was on John Dickerson's podcast about talking about it, which is, you know, a perfect thing. So maybe, I don't know, maybe we can get him on our podcast for our future edition, but yeah. we're going to discuss it next time we record. So like 2 weeks ish, probably in the group, we'll put out a little call for like, hey, tell us your thoughts about this. So yeah, if you've already read it or if you're going to read it, just pick up a copy of this and we will talk about it together.
It's one of the early chapters. He talks about urine more than I was expecting.
Yeah.
But you'll have to read it to find out why.
Yeah.
I mean, which is they really... had a real concern about those rags being dirty and they thought PP made it less dirty.
Don't spoil it for them, Johnny.
That's Johnny.
Oh, no. I thought this was a thing like that people used to go around collecting rags
for paper. Yeah. Remember about that in the Mark Kalinske book about paper.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was like a common thing.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, not that people do, that people knew about before they realized that wood was cheaper and just as good almost.
Yeah. It's a surprisingly funny book.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how far you guys are into it, but like there are parts where he just this phrasing that he chooses. You're like, sometimes you're like, okay, he's playing playful right now. Like he's just like kind of almost like letting loose a little bit, but I'm kind of shocked. I'm like 75 pages into it right now. I'm a little shocked at some of the parts that I've like finished, like I've kept reading. I'm like, this has been about accounting, but I am like pretty fascinated by this. So
yeah, I'm going to copy that chapter for my brother, who's an accountant. Like, bro, yeah. It revolutionized everything. We have capitalism thanks to these cool notebooks.
Yay, right? Capitalism.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And he in that chapter, he like very subtly just goes, yeah, well, they were busy inventing capitalism. I'm like, wait, what? Let's expand on this a bit.
Yep. Yeah. So good book. I can't even remember. I think I just saw, I think maybe Amazon gave me like a suggestion, like gave me this book as a suggestion. I was like, ooh.
Somebody at Amazon was like, send it to that Wealthly guy.
Yeah. He'll tell the whole podcast and everybody will buy a copy of this book.
So I shared this with you guys before we record it, but I was listening to that podcast in the summer walking to get Rosie from cooking camp, and I didn't have a notebook on me, and I didn't write it down, and I forgot all about it.
The irony.
Like, all damn kicking myself, like, dude, I could have read this like 2 months ago, 3 months ago.
So you get it at your local bookstore if you can, and if you can't, you know, Amazon can get it to you in like 2 days. So anything else we want to talk about, guys?
Good talking to you guys.
I feel like we barely talked about pencils this episode.
It's true.
Yeah.
Sorry, I talked about guitars a lot, which seems like it's becoming a thing. So sorry about that. I'll try to check that next time.
What is it? It's what do we call it? The Strummable podcast?
Strummable. Stringable?
Stringable podcast.
Yeah. There you go. That'll be the offshoot where I just talk about guitars and
the offshoot.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you for listening. We have some supporters we want to thank from Patreon. If you go to erasable.us/Patreon, you will find our account there where you can get access to some exclusive content, some special merch and things that we share out with people who are supporting us there. And thank you to all of you who are supporting us at the producer level, which includes John Schroeder, Ellen Mac Tucker, Dana Morris, Paul Moorhead, William Modlin, John Capelluti, Stephen Frenscali, Aaron Willard, Millie Blackwell, Liz Rotundo, Melissa Miller, Angie, Aaron Bollinger, Ida Umphers, Michael Dialosa, Tana Feliz, Ann Sipe, Michael Hagen, Chris Metzkus, Mary Collis, David Johnson, Phil Munson, Valerie Drew, Tom Keekley, Andre Torres, Kathleen Rogers, Hans Noodleman, and John Wood. So these are all people who are supporting us. The Patreon at the producer level, which is $10 a month. So thank you so much to everyone who's supporting us on Patreon to help us keep this going and dream up fun stuff to share with you all. So thank you so much for your support. You can find us at erasable.us and you can find Patreon at erasable.us/Patreon or on Patreon. So the show notes will be available online or on whatever podcatcher you're using. We encourage you to write a review, like our podcast, star our podcast, whatever it is that your podcatcher of choice uses to help us. That really does help to help us break through the algorithm to be heard by more people. What'd you say?
To be found.
Yeah. Oh, I literally thought you went beep beep boop, like, or like beep, made beep, like computer noises. Like, yes, exactly. Algorithm. Thank you, Andy.
Yes. Yeah. Binary, yes. So,
thank you. This has been episode 216 of the Raceball Podcast, and we will talk to you soon.
Turn it off.